Welcome to the Words Matter Pod, a podcast dedicated to wordsmiths. My name is Akil. I'm here with Damani Gordon and Teresa Cooper Gordon of Genuine Culture, a Western Massachusetts-based multifaceted company that organizes and promotes live entertainment, film series, theme parties, and seminars. How are you guys?
You're doing great. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for being a part of this. You know, back on the road again, Words Matter. Coming from New York up to Springfield again. But I've attended a few of these events back in, you know, back before the world got shut down. Last event I attended was like right February of 2020, like right before I even knew what COVID was. But I'm happy to interview you guys and, you know, tapping into your story and yeah, man. So who are you?
Yeah, glad to be here. I'm Damani Gordon, Damani Saitu Gordon, and I represent Genuine Culture LLC. I'm here with my mom.
My name is Teresa Cooper Gordon. I also go by Coochie Chakalia, and I'm proud to be here with my son Damani and be a part of Genuine Culture.
Thank you. And where and when does the story start leading up to Genuine Culture for both of you guys?
Wow, like, you know, I could do the long, short version, but Genuine Culture started when, you know, I look at it like when I was a little kid, just being around the environment I was around, especially with my parents being very involved in the community and music. So, you know, I grew up, you know, watching my parents throw different community events. Like, we've had, you know, fundraisers in our basement, you know, hooked it up the basement, have a little band down there and fundraise for a little community organization. You know, my mom's from New York City, my dad's from Philly. So they brought all their cultural experiences to us and brought us with them,
yeah,
to various different events, you know, and from the park jams to jazz shows and everything. So it's always been what we do as a family as well.
So, as Damani said, yeah, that's what we did as a family. As a family, the music is a part of the heartbeat.
Yeah.
It's the soul of the family. And so I grew up in New York, but I grew up to music. My parents listened to jazz. At the time that I grew up, there was a lot of Latin music in New York. I listened to a lot of Eddie Palmieri, the LeBron brothers, you know, a lot of that. Also with the R&B that was, you know, definitely in my era as growing up as a teenager. And so music, you know, is definitely that heartbeat. And so we continue to have it in our household at all times. It's therapy.
Yeah. You know,
it's very calming for us. So that's what we did. And in particular, when I came to UMass to go to school, you know, growing up in New York, they had the jazz mobiles. They had the music in the park, as my son said, you know, with the basketball games, all of this stuff started. The brothers just playing the drums in the park, the congas and the bongo. So it's just been a part of us, you
yeah
know. And when I came to UMass in the 70s, I came here to an incredible group of artists. I took a class with Archie Shepp called Revolutionary Concepts of Music at New Africa House. Max Roach was here. We had the Voices of New Africa, which he started. Then Dr. Horace Boyer came on later on. Reggie Workman was here. I mean, there were so many artists in this area. It was just totally unbelievable. And I, you know, had my three sons with their dad. And so they got exposed to all of the music and all of the arts at a very early age.
And Akil, just to piggyback, if I could just
yeah
continue, like, because you said, like, where to start, like, so I just like to give the backstory to that too, so people understand the foundational aspect of it. But you know, we officially started Genuine Culture in 2017. We can go talk mm-hmm about that too if you like to. You know, so
yeah, you could start.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, so I just the concept came to me like back in 2013. Believe it or not, I was taking a class. It was like this artist management class. And we had this project to work on. They called it the bag, like, you know, BHAG, your big, you know, it was like audacious goal, you know, your big, hairy, audacious goal is called. And I, you know, I've always wanted to, you know, always been involved in hip hop, being an MC as a young, as a youngster, and just being around that scene all the time. And I always wanted to keep that energy going. So that's where I came up with the concept, just taking that class. But it didn't really come into fruition until like 4 years later, 2017, because I wasn't sure how to do it and what to do with it. And I was just at a point in my life in 2017 where it's like, okay, it's you know, you have all these thoughts, like, how am I going to get the money to get this up? Yeah. How do I get something like this started? But, you know, when you have an idea and a concept and your creativity, you can make things happen. And something just kicked off with me, and I just thought, like, hey, let's go for it. Let's go for it. Got the business plan down, have the concept down, and we incorporated, you know, did our LLC, got the business right, and we officially kicked it off in 2017. That was our first event in February.
Yeah.
But 2016 when we got the business together. So mm-hmm. That's how we kicked it off.
Yeah. I mean, what did you have a background in live events? I mean, you guys, you said you had events going on in your basement growing up. Did that infrastructure, you think that subconsciously or was that consciously just in you that, you know, I can do this too?
Yeah, that, I think it's a little bit of everything. I think it's just in my DNA, in my blood, you know, just what was passed down to me. And also, I think you're right, Akil, like subconsciously, I'm involved in this stuff and, you know, at the time. And sometimes you don't realize the influence until you get a little older. And then I realized, you know, like this is us. This is what we do. This is what we love to do. This is what our heart's in. So, yeah, subconsciously, we just been involved in it, you know, and just, and there's no other feeling like, you know, bringing people together and bringing community together for a common cause. And that's always been a great inspiration, you know.
Yeah.
So when Damani talks about, you know, doing things in our basement in Amherst, so a Better Chance program is one of the oldest programs in Amherst. And it's a program that brings young,
you can speak a little closer,
young males from the inner cities where they're at schools that are underachieving schools, but they are achieving, and they come into areas that supposedly have higher achieving schools. So the ABC program was is still in Amherst, and there were nothing but young, there was 12 black young men, a couple of Latino brothers as well, that, you know, came from the cities, and they came into Amherst. And we used to do fundraisers in our basement for the program. And Damani, they were little, but they used to do breakdancing. You know, we created our own entertainment. You know, some of us would do doo-wopping. We would just start singing, you know. Doo-wop is a big era of our music as well, you know. Everybody would do food, but we did those types of community events to support the community and support things that we cared about. We also did programs. We were in Amherst, in Hadley. The Ground Round was a restaurant there. And on Sunday, we would get together and we'd bring artists in, and they would come and they would perform, like Martina, who's one of Springfield owns vocalists. She would come in. We had Charles Langford. You know, we had a number of different artists that were on the college campuses playing that would come in and do these events. And Damani and his brothers were always a part of that. It was a family type of event. Them collecting tickets at the door, them helping to set up. It was just one of those things that we did.
Yeah. You guys, so Damani, you grew up in this area. You grew up in Amherst?
Yes, yes.
So, you know, your husband's from Philly. You're from New York. Mm-hmm. These are cultural epicenters, you know, New York with jazz and hip hop, and Philly with soul, and jazz as well. Why stay in Amherst? You know, why not raise your kids in these cultural epicenters?
So, you know, when I came here to go to school, and so did my husband. He came here to go to school. Like I said, when I came here, I felt like I was at a black college when I was at UMass back in the day. I mean, that's the difference, you know, that when I speak about, you know, all of the artists that was there, when I talk about Archie Shepp, when I talk about Max Roach, Reggie Workman, Avery Sharp, who's born and raised here in Springfield, who was also at UMass at the time we was there, spent his career playing with McCoy Tyner. So my kids and their kids all grew up together in Amherst. We had people like Dr. Janetta Coles, who became president of Spelman College, Dr. Esther Terry, Nelson Stevens, artist, Paul Carter Harris. I mean, these are all artists that were from the cities that were here at this university. And when I graduated, I got my first job here. And I decided, you know, like, okay, let's lay here for a little bit. Let's see what's going on. Did that a couple of years later. I got married, and I had my first son, which is Damani Sei, too, and just decided to stay in the area. I felt that there were a lot more activities and exposure that I could give my kids in a five-college community where everybody came through here.
Yeah.
I mean, they could tell you, you know, and I'm sure Damani will share with you some of the hip-hop artists that he's seen here as a youngin, that, you know, Queen Latifah, for one, you know, that, you know, he's in her trailer, you know. They're younger right there at UMass, you know, on the pond when she came to perform for the spring break semester. Also, there was Bright Moments, which happened every Thursday at the pond at UMass with, you know, Fela Ransakuti came.
Mm.
Yeah, oh, yeah. There was Eddie Palmieri, Tito Puente. I mean, you name it, the artists, they came, they were coming through here, you know. So this was a part of their life, and this is why I decided to stay in Amherst.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those events at that time, I probably would not have been able to afford.
In New York.
For my three kids and me and my husband to go to those events.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting, Akil, when you said that, you know, the cultural epicenter, this area at one point, and still is, and it was, you know, it was just an amazing, you know, looking back at it growing up around that time, especially during the 90s, me coming of age as, you know, middle school and high school, just all the access we had because of things that were going on at UMass, the Black Student Unions, the Black Mass Communication Project, you know, from Common, to the Roots, the Boot Camp Click, De La Soul, Onyx, who were actually helping bring it up here next week. They were up here for one of their first shows. You know, me and my boy Tone, we opened up at Hampshire College for Black Moon and Smith & Wesson. Black Moon's first album came out. It may have been their first time ever in Western Massachusetts. So it was great because we had access and was exposed to the culture right here, being in this Amherst, this suburban town.
Yeah.
And that's one of the importance of genuine culture, what we're trying to do, because we got to keep that legacy going, that culture going, because some people you would not know about if you came here now. Mm-hmm. But everybody touched down here from all different types of artists from all over the place, and it was an amazing time, and we got to learn a lot and be involved, you know?
Mm-hmm. Do you think there was one live event that you saw one concert that you saw that said, you know, you participated in the culture as an artist, but was there one live event that you saw that said, I can throw something like this, you know, I can do this for the community at a young age? Or was it till later in your life where you said, oh, there's a lack of this, let me start it now?
Right. And that's a lot of it, what it was, going to those shows back then, I never really thought about putting on stuff like this. And I was, working as like a creative and artist myself. You know, we were making music and open up for people and doing talent shows. So we're on that lane. But then, you know, later on down the line, you realize that, we got to keep this going. It's very important. It's a very important area in Western Massachusetts in a lot of different ways, you know. So it's like, okay, we got to bring this back. We got to keep this going because, you know, our legacies and our histories are sometimes erased. I shouldn't say sometimes, they are.
Yeah.
And it's up to us to keep that going, to keep that narrative going and do what we do.
So when Damani opened up for Black Moon, his mother here happened to be the first director of the Multicultural Center at Hampshire College.
Mm.
So I was responsible for bringing Black Moon head to the campus. And, of course, you know, I have an artist in my home. Of course you can open up, you know. And it was a great show. So, you know, again, as a family, how do you intertwine your family into what your goals are?
Yeah.
And how you want to keep, you know, the music and the history alive?
I mean, you know, this is a question for both of you guys. You know, your child of hip hop, and there's often a disconnect between our parents' generation and our music due to the vulgarity of the content. You're the vice president of Genuine Culture, and you know, it's kind of a surprise to me that you helped get Black Moon to UMass. You know, Black Moon, they were street, but they were like conscious in a way, but they were, you know, street at the same time. Was there a disconnect with, you know, the vulgarity of the music, you know, sometimes?
So, excuse me. Of course there is.
Yeah.
There was, you know. But at the same time, Black Moon, they were just coming out the gate.
Yeah.
So I had some control and power there, you know, that you're coming on a college campus. You do have some very good things to say that are uplifting.
Yeah.
So we wanted to keep it that way, you know. And so, you know, the language was smoothed down and the message was delivered. Because I felt that that was the most important aspect of bringing them there, that there's a message in the music.
Yeah.
And I wanted that message to get through and not for it to be erased in any form or fashion.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how we did it.
Yeah.
And if you notice on my business card for Genuine Culture LLC, my quote is connecting through generations. Because that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, they pay attention to the, you know, sometimes the curses might, or the content was considered negative content might overpower really the message, the overall message. And I guess for me, as a fan of hip hop, I didn't care, you know, the content was way more important than how it was said. So for you to be able to get past the, you know, curses and whatever negative things associated with hip hop, that's very big and that's very important for, and it definitely helps the morale of younger people to see that somebody of a older generation could say, you know, this is important too. You know, this has substance as well.
Right, and I think, you know, that is the aspect of it all, is that, you know, for me, you know, hip-hop is about a message. It's delivering a specific message. And in order to do that, okay, you have to make sure that the communication is correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, as an elder, even at that time, because I was older than them, and here's my children that are involved in it, is to have that conversation about the most important thing that you want to say, you need to make sure that you can say it. And sometimes when you're using specific words, it's going to take away from what it is that you're trying to say if you're not using the correct words.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use the correct words without the cussing and the vulgarity.
Yeah.
You really can.
Yeah.
You know? And so, I mean, that was my agreement with, you know, with Black Moon. And
yeah.
Like, okay, this is how we going to roll with this, you know.
And just to be clear, Black Moon was still Black Moon, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
They still, you know, represented, you know.
They did.
Who they were. And, you know, that's a great question because, you know, one of my favorite groups still today is N.W.A. I listen to a lot of Too Short, DJ Quick, a lot of that stuff that was, you know, we had to hide from our parents too. You know, that stuff we didn't want to let them know what we listened to. But, you know, when you have a foundation that you get, we understand different contexts, you know. So it's, we understood, you know, that side of things too. But even back then, you know, NWA also had to express yourself, you know, and you know, after Police and all this other stuff. So there was all, even Too Short, you know, his first single was, you know, really about getting out the ghetto, you know. So there was always a conscious element to even what they labeled gangster rap, whatever. Mm-hmm. It was always there. You know, there was that yin and that yang, and that's what brought that wholeness. That's what, you know, made it real. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. So we learned a lot of different things from the music of hip hop on the conscious side. And also the street side, too. You know what I'm saying? You could pick up a lot of things from there, too, and just learn how to live life and navigate through these different areas and know what's going on in different places. Mm-hmm. So that's the beauty of hip-hop, just the multifaceted of mm-hmm. it, you know, and just there's something for everybody and something you could always take away with it.
It's mm-hmm. all about balance.
Yeah.
And everything in life has, you know, you have to balance it out.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, if everybody was... It was Talib Kweli or Kendrick or Common. Right. I mean, it wouldn't be the biggest genre of music in the world.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think that genuine culture would thrive in the early days of hip hop when it was still considered a fad in the 80s? You know,
man, that's a great question. I think, you know, I think we would, because of just the intentions, I think. I think when you have the right intentions going to something, and we are really about the culture. I know, you know, even the word culture now, it gets
thrown around. Yeah,
yeah, you know, it's like sometimes it's like it's oversized. We're about the culture. But are you really about the culture? Do you understand what really that means? So, we're really rooted in people and culture, and have the right mm-hmm. intentions behind it, in terms of reflecting who we are. In terms of an artistic and creative way. So I think in some ways, who knows, we may have even been bigger just because at that time specifically, you know, the conscious period of rap was in too, you know, in a major way, you know, and really supportive measures of who we are as people and us representing ourselves in a certain way. So I think genuine culture would have thrived there too.
Yeah.
Back then.
You know, because the music... I keep saying it's about the message, and it's about the real lifestyle and what we're living in. And it's one of the things for me with the rap music, you know, there was some stuff I was like, well, that's unnecessary, you know. But there was that conscious part of it that was very, very real in terms of the lifestyle that we were living. And how do we make changes in those lifestyles, and how we build up awareness and what those lifestyles are. You know, because ain't nobody going to listen to some of the other stuff that was said. You're not going anywhere with that negative message.
Mm-hmm. You know, Damani, I think it's safe to say that the bulk of genuine culture events celebrate the legacy of legendary hip-hop events like A Tribe Called Quest and Ghostface and the Wu-Tang Clan, as well as many others. Are you purposely only focusing on legendary hip hop acts?
I like to focus on the culture in general.
Yeah.
And you know, one of those things that are foundational pieces. And you know, when you have groups like you just named, you know, as Wu-Tang, Tribe Called Quest, and the impact they had in the culture, and just even today, I mean, we talked about Kendrick, you know, it's a direct influence of Tribe Called Quest.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those things, that foundational piece it has to be there, and it's always going to be there. Wait, what was that question again? Gil, what was that?
Yeah, so, you know, are you only focusing on the legendary acts?
Right. So, and you know, like, one thing Bambaataa said was, like, you mix the old school with the new school, and you get the true school, you know? So that's what we try to bring, you know? We bring those things together. And, you know, Akil, the first show we ever did was a show featuring a street dancer. You may have heard of him. He's out of Brooklyn, named Storyboard P. He just had a big article of him in the New York Times last week. Last Sunday, because he did a show. He's featured in Jay-Z's 444 video and the Picasso Baby video.
Yeah.
The Alicia Keys videos. I mean, he's really close with Erykah Badu. He performs with her. Last time she was on Jimmy Fallon, he was there. He's a legendary street dancer out of Brooklyn. You know, young guy just came up from the trenches, you know, with the flex style and the way he motions, you know, his body motions. It's like watching a movie, and he tells a story with his dance. Mm-hmm. So that's the first event we did, you know. So he, that was like a celebration of the old school and the new school. You know, he's bringing all these different, you know, he's bringing that Brooklyn flavor, that hip hop flavor, as well as everything else, the, you know, the Bruck Up style and the West Indian culture, and bringing all that together. So that was awesome to bring him up here, the first time he's ever been here. And now you see him, and you know, he's in all these videos and doing his thing, and he's everywhere. So that's, that was the first thing we did in 2007. So we try to represent for as many aspects of the culture that we can, black culture and hip hop. Mm-hmm.
Do you eventually want to create events where albums that are maybe not 20 years old, but maybe 10 years old or younger are celebrated?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great idea. You know, Metallica, who just interviewed, we were talking about something similar to that in terms of representing something that may be 10 years.
Yeah.
10 years old, because, you know, 10 years now is like a lifetime now for some reason, you know?
Sure.
Especially how fast things change.
I was a teenager
10
years ago.
Mm-hmm. You know, and we talked about Kendrick Cole and different people like that, you know, they're legends in their own right, you know, so they should be they could be celebrated too. So I'm with that.
Just to go more into your background, you work as a diversity and equity specialist for Amherst Public Schools. And you're an after-school program supervisor as well as a youth basketball coach. What interchangeable assets from leadership roles outside of genuine culture can be applied to live events and vice versa?
Yeah, it's, I think, you know, those things that I do, I think it's leading by example, right? When you talk the talk, you got to walk the walk. And I think in terms of being any type of leader, that's apparent. That has to happen. And we see a lot of things now, a lot of people that pop up and that we might look at as leaders, and we hear them say one thing, but that the actions prove different.
Yeah.
So I think it's very important to tap in and to represent who you are in a real way in terms of leadership. And like I said, those intentions have to be there, you know, and mindset, and just really being about the cause. You know, there's a lot of terms that get thrown out there now. Activists, we talked about culture, but what are you really about?
Yeah.
And how are you really impacting people? And that's what the leadership's about.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Gordon, I wanted to ask you this question. In an interview you guys did a while back with Radio Plasma, you said that your children came of age and started to listen to hip-hop. This goes just back to the conversation with we were speaking about earlier about just when you guys started breakdancing and you know, rapping yourself. You said that when your children came of age and started to listen to hip-hop, you likened the music to Nikki Giovanni and The Last Poets. Was that your overall opinion of all rap at the time, as well as how the lyricism progressed over time? And would you still liken today's music to those poets?
Well, I think that, for me, James Brown was rapping.
Yeah.
back in my time.
Yeah.
Know? Because it's the words and how you infiltrate those words with the music. So, say it again. But I mean,
so you know, you liken the music. You said something about how first time you heard rap, you know, you were like, this is like Nikki Giovanni, this is like The Last Poets.
Well, yeah, a lot of it is for me and my generation.
Yeah.
Okay, so before your generation of rap music was, you know, we Nikki Giovanni, The Last Poets, you know. There was even James Cleveland with gospel music, and there was that connection, you know, like with the spoken word. It was like a form of rap. It was a different type of music. And I, one of the most important things for me in hooking up with genuine culture and my son and growing up with my children is that because they listen to music, they listen to jazz, and so when Tribe is playing something, and I'm like, wow, wait, that's something. Demi would be like, yeah, that's something from Grant Green, and I'm like, you know, it's just being able to make that connection, and that has always been so amazing to me with the music and making those connections with my children in terms of the generation, to see the styles of music and the flow over of the music and how they they come together. So yeah. we're keeping it alive. The music is not dead.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
And how we bring it together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that for me is very important, and it will continue to, I think, stay in that arena.
Is there anybody currently that inspires you, any artists, any rapper currently that you could say is maybe the new Gil Scott, or, you know?
Like a Gil Scott? Gil Scott was another one that was incredible. Yeah.
Or Last Poets.
The Last Poets. I think Common.
Okay,
yeah. Common definitely, you know, comes with that flow. I think Kendrick Lamar definitely,
mm-hmm.
you know, delivers some strong flows and messages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Back to Damani, back to, you know, after school programs that you teach. Can you give some examples of the specific things that you teach in these classes in the hip hop club?
Sure. Like, yeah, this is something I did. I'm no longer doing an after school program now, but I did for some years. And one of the things we had was a hip hop club. So the most important thing, I think, is just the founding elements of what hip hop is, in terms of the graffiti, you know, the art, the DJing,
mm-hmm.
the break dancing and the MCing. And I think, you know, sometimes on hip hop, the focus is on rap because that's the commodity. That's what sells. You know, that's people come out to concerts. But, you know, and different things, it generates, you know, money in terms of that sense. But,
yeah,
you know, that wasn't the first element that came across. You know, mm-hmm. you know, it starts with the DJs and the graffiti writers.
Yeah.
And the DJs brought out the dancers and as well as the MC. So it's about understanding where that came from, the lack of resources, and how we, you know, just for, you know, just not to be cliche, you make lemons out of lemonade. And,
yeah.
and our creativity and our power of influence is astronomical, and it's very important for the youngins to understand that. Like, we created this.
Yeah.
These are the elements. It's
yeah.
still here.
Yeah.
And there's some serious power that's in it, and you have it because you started it.
Yeah.
You come from a legacy that started, so.
As a youth growing up in Amherst, there weren't any trains to graffiti write on. You know, I mean, people weren't. There's barely any sidewalks to even put a cardboard flattened cardboard box on and breakdance. How do you participate in the five elements of hip hop in a rural suburb?
Yeah, well, you know, we're transplants in Amherst, so, you know, my mom's from New York, so. We spent a lot of time as youth in New York City. We
yeah.
got to see that hip hop in real time. I got older cousins. One of my older cousins was an MC. And just being around New York in the summer times and holidays and being around family, being around the blocks, we got to see it. We was involved
yeah.
in it. So, you know, we're fortunate to get that best of both worlds, like, you know, growing up in Amherst, but also being connected to New York and Philly and being there and being able to participate in those things. Different park jams and, you know, being in Queens and seeing the Lost Boys around with their crew, you know, and they filmed a video, you know, videos in Lincoln Park right across where my mom grew up and my grandparents were. So, you know, it was great. I'm very fortunate of that because, you know, you had the Amherst side, but also had the epicenter.
Yeah.
Where was that? We was there. We saw it. My family's from there. So it's just that lineage is my roots.
Yeah.
So, it worked out, you know, for that. You know, I'm very fortunate for that, you know.
And you come back here and you're just extra cool.
Yeah, you know.
Whatever know. Fashion and
exactly.
And yeah, this, exactly. The whole style, the music that you bring back. And I'm sure whatever, there was no internet. So whatever tapes that you could bring. And
yes.
Yeah, you just
aware
of
everything. Taping Video Music Box on VHS. We used to tape, like, you know, The Box and all the stuff you could in New York.
Yeah.
Tape that all summer and bring it back here and be like, yo, you know, yo, the mixtape. So
yeah.
You're exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? In that same Radio Plasma interview, Damani, you said, and genuine culture, your intentions with genuine culture are to entertain as well as to educate. Why is it important? And do you think that your attendees understand that's what they're a part of, an educational and and entertaining event. Sorry, edutainment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think some people might be aware. I think a lot of people are not exactly aware, but it's almost like, you know, back in the day when, you know, you need some medicine, you were young, you didn't like it, so your moms might crush the aspirin and put it in the orange juice. You don't even know it's there, but you're getting something from it. And I think that's why how we, you know, curate a lot of our events to be entertaining. You're going to have a good time, but you're going to leave with some type of connection being made with the music and the culture. And I think some people do realize it, but I don't think a lot of people do, which is great. Because you're there for a good time, but then you leave with something, whether you know it or not. And I think after a while, it starts to click in and people start to understand, like, oh, wow, I learned something. There's a real connection. Or I made a connection with somebody else that I never would have met ever before.
Yeah.
You know, and build like that. So that's how we, like, it's important just to build humanity like that and keep that going. We try to be kind of clever with it, you know, in terms of that.
I also think that, you know, in terms of the generations, you know, we see it.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about it, but we do it. Okay, because, you know, Damani's generation is there, but so was my generation there.
Yeah.
So it's that connect. And it's bringing it to the table, and it keeps the conversation going, and it keeps the information moving. It definitely does.
Do you think that your position of leadership as an activist helps with your position in Genuine Culture?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I think in terms of, you know, my life, I mean, I grew up, was born in the 50s. So I grew up in New York, the 60s and the 70s. I grew up in, you know, identifying who I am. I'm black and I'm proud.
Mm-hmm.
The Panther Party. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I grew up in that era. So in terms of being involved in civics and community, it's been my life.
Yeah.
I've also saw my parents involved in community and civics. So, you know, you take those roots on with you when you do that.
Yeah.
You know, being a commissioner of public housing right now in Holyoke, Massachusetts, as we know, the whole situation around housing and how important housing is, you know, because it relates to how well housing is put together for you with your health, with mm-hmm. your education, you know, with your social economic income.
Yeah.
It's all there, and I think, you know, the role that I play, and as my son just said, you know, walking the talk,
mm-hmm.
actually being in the community and doing it, you get a lot of respect, and that's where your leadership comes in at.
Yeah,
and people see that, mm-hmm. and people respect that, and people come away with some nourishment.
Mm-hmm.
And they join in that family, and you make changes in your community.
Yeah. And speaking about that nourishment, you, in that same interview, you said the arts can be very comforting, very supportive. It makes you strong. It makes the community strong. You know, could you divulge more into that?
Yeah, I mean, the arts is a way of identifying who we are. It's a way of looking at people who have used their own creativity, and we all have creativity. Yeah. We all do. And it's just being able to tap into what your creativity is. And so for me, I mean, I think when you see people, when we do events at Genuine Culture and people come out, they see a lot of things. They see a mother and a son working together, organizing and coordinating.
Yeah.
They see that what we're doing, we want it to be beneficial to our community. And the results that we get is that we get the support at the events that we do. And they're packed. And sometimes we have to say we can't let anybody else in, because, wow, you know, we're over that.
Good problems.
So, you know, I think, yeah, right. So I think that, you know, just it has a lot to do with history, identity, and also being able to tell your story. I definitely believe in that.
Yeah.
And what we do.
How important are the arts in a revolution?
Very important. I mean, you know, it's not going to be televised, you know, but yeah, the arts are—they are the change. As we're speaking, we're talking about how we've seen the change in the music, and how we've seen the cooperative aspects of the music coming together. Even if it was with Nikki Giovanni or Gil Scott or the Last Poets, we still see the flow.
Yeah.
With some of the younger artists that are out.
Yeah. You know, this podcast is obviously named Words Matter Pod, and as someone who organizes and promotes live events, many of these events showcase word-based arts like the music. Do you consider yourself to be a wordsmith?
Yes, because I could write rhymes too.
Yeah.
I'm kind of nice with that too. I haven't been participating in a while, but I think, you know, just that foundation of growing up being an MC, and my father, you know, rest in peace to him, Richard Scott Gordon. My dad was involved in a lot of, you know, he was a playwright. He wrote plays.
Wow.
And poetry, mm-hmm, and different things of that. So, you know, words were always important. We're always around. And like I said, my parents always had people around and just brought people together by using words, you know, and the way we can craft words to just incorporate a certain feeling or transmit information. So, that's a great question. I think, you know, I would consider we are wordsmiths. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What about your background specifically as an artist? Do you consider yourself an artist or a wordsmith yourself?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I sung in choirs. I sung with Max Roach in the Voices, wow, of Africa. Sung with Horace Clarence Boyer. So I did work like that, and I can write. And I do believe that, you know, the words do matter. You know, the words matter to me as a mother, as a wife, how I raised my family, and what words did I use? What values?
Yeah.
What words did I use to help uplift them and to raise them, mm-hmm, in a strong manner, in a strong way. Positive.
Yeah.
And Akil, real quick, mom, she's really, you're really good at like speaking. I feel like, I don't feel like I'm, you know, you have this, she has this skill like going off the top of the head, you know, prepare speeches. You don't have to do that. You just come, it just comes natural when it's real. So always, you know, I always admired that too. Just.
Yeah. A great voice as well.
Yeah. 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 Off the top. Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of times I feel like, you know, I'm in positions sometimes that, and a lot of times to have to speak and speak to communities. And I just feel like speaking comes from your soul. It's your passion. And sometimes when you're writing it down, you're going to miss it. And
yeah.
I think that people can tell when you're speaking from the soul, there's a connection that you definitely make.
Should I just erase all my questions and just speak for them?
Just go off the top.
Yeah, just go off the top.
I know. No. See, that's something I can't do. That's what I'm saying. I got to write everything down. Kid. Like, no.
You know, you guys also manage artists. You manage an artist by the name of Mitali Banda, who's been interviewed on the show. Are your intentions as a manager similar to your intentions as an event organizer and promoter?
Yeah, somewhat. It's just, I think being involved with someone like Mitali, who's very, extremely talented in a lot of different ways, very intelligent and really soulful, and he really has a great vision of what he wants to do. So anytime, you know, we could be involved with that and being some any type of assistance to help someone get to the next level of where they're trying to get to. And like I said, his intentions are right. He's a great message and just very talented. So it definitely goes along with what we do at Genuine Culture. Yeah. And it also helps us out. It gives us the experience to work with an artist and to make connections outside of there and another aspect of the game, learning a lot through that. So it's really beneficial in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
Metalli's real special for me in the connection. So Metalli's mother and father and I all went to UMass together. Mm. I lived in the Sylvan area. We lived in the Sylvan area. I lived in the building Sylvan. And Martha and Kenny, we were students. They weren't married then because we were students. We were going to school. They lived in the back in Brown. So, of course, we were very, very, you know, close, you know, going to school together. And now my son is, you know, managing Metalli. So that whole family, you know, how that comes back, and how we started out. So it's really special. And again, you know, when you talk about Genuine Culture, this is what makes that connection and that leadership, mm-hmm. what you see us do. It really does come from the community, and it comes from building extended family, and that's what we have.
Yeah. Back to just Genuine Culture, kind of, you know, continuing that legacy of the events that you used to attend and the artists that used to come through the area when you were a kid. How much support and advocacy does the hip-hop community in Western Massachusetts receive?
Well, that's a great question. You know, we've built up some support, you know, but it takes a lot of grind and work and just networking and being out at places and just meeting people. But like I think, you know, the legacy is here, but a lot of people don't know. And we do, and big shouts to everybody that support that's ever came to any type of show that we've done or gave any type of donation. We really appreciate it. But it's we do get support, but it's not a total support. You know, just to be honest, like, you know, sometimes our communities can be fragmented, you know, and everything. You know, there's a lot of people doing great things and different things, but what I see is the collaboration not being there as much.
Yeah.
And that's one thing we try to do. We collaborate with different organizations as well to make things happen. But I think, you know, what we're doing and bringing people together, that's what it's about. Because there's a lot of people doing a lot of great things, but it's spread out and it's stagnant and it's not as much togetherness as I think it should be.
Yeah.
So it's great working with someone like you, Akil, with this podcast.
Thank you.
And being here in this place, the Ethnic Study, and us all working together. This is how it should look like. We should have our own ecosystem. And I think a lot of work needs to be done around that. And I know a lot of time it could be ego or just people just being self-interest, but we're not like that. We're about collaboration. We're about building each other up. And I think that's the next step that we need to get back to for real in our culture, you know?
Mm-hmm. The extended family.
That's right.
Yeah.
Cooperative economics.
Mm, yeah. When you know, I'm bouncing around a lot. When you started the hip hop club and after school program, your intentions were to expose kids to the foundations and culture of hip hop. Was there any pushback from parents and school administration based off of the negative elements associated with the culture?
You know what? No, I didn't. If there was, I didn't feeling of it or hearing of it or and didn't even feel it. And you know, it was one, there's always one story that sticks out to me about that and the importance of that club. You know, the group Public Enemy, you know, as we know of, and you know, there was a member, Flavor Flav, you know, one of the greatest hype men in hip hop history. Mm-hmm. He had a show that came out called Flavor of Love. Remember that, right? And I remember, you know, it got so popular, and the kids, you know, they took the Flavor Flav, but didn't understand where he came from. They had no idea about Public Enemy or what they represented. So that right there was like a spark, really, for me to start that up. So we're talking about making the connections. You see this guy in this, you know, this reality TV show. It's kind of wild. It's crazy. But they know him as like this character. But he deserves a lot more respect in that and understanding the foundations of where he came from. So things like that happen within the culture, I feel like it's important for us to really make those connections, as we say. Mm-hmm. So and address them. But in terms of the support, I mean, there was no pushback.
Yeah.
I think which was great, and that's another great thing about being Amherst, you know, is like people also, you know, were supportive of that, the school administration and everything, which is awesome, you know. Yeah. So.
And that also goes back to what you guys were talking about with just the balance of hip hop, because Flavor Flav just being known as his second career is almost him being a caricature.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he was a part of a group that had political messaging and was, you know, critiqued the government and critiqued society and white supremacy.
Yes.
You know, but at the same time, he was also in Public Enemy to kind of make the message more digestible at the same time. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
So speaking of them, Sister Soulja. I had the opportunity to bring Sister Soulja to Hampshire College, you know, who was a part of that. But, you know, Sister Soulja, when she came, she did her activist part. She did her real education to talk about white supremacy, you know, to talk about her being on the cover of the, you know, Times magazine, you know, around the Bill Clinton stuff. So, you know, and that's on the college campus, you know, but in terms of the hip-hop, because she's involved with the hip-hop, but here's the balance, because this is what she's also talking about, you know, and within the community and history and white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. Are your intentions with Genuine Culture now the same as they were when the business was just an idea?
The tensions are the same, but I think now we're at a point where we're just, you know, looking to grow in other avenues that we never thought about exploring. We never thought we would be, well, at least I never thought we would be necessarily, like, helping out with artists and managing artists, you know. At first it was just, like, kind of just like this, you know, events, which we still do, and that's the foundation of what we do, like events, parties, and seminars, but now we're in the aspect of working with other artists and people reaching out to for our recommendations and seeing if we could help curate other events. So I think we're at a point of growth now, starting with just at, you know, basic events and shows of where we came from, to actually working with different artists in the community and bringing those artists to different places and different venues. You know, there's venues that call us and ask us to participate in different events, which is awesome. So it's just a testament, and it makes me feel good about the work we've put in and, you know, your reputation precedes you. So we always try to stick with the right intentions and do it for the right reasons, you know.
How big do you expect Genuine Culture to get?
At this point, we've been around for 5 years. February to be five years. And we want to keep this going. We want to be a premier organization of cultural events in the Northeast region.
You know?
That's one of our big goals now, and hopefully spread it out worldwide.
Yeah.
Who knows? But we just you know, focus on just doing the work one day at a time, whatever resources we have, and try and do as much as possible with it and keep going.
Yeah.
Keep it moving.
And we have this passion for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We're LLC.
Yeah.
I mean, LLC, money. We don't have money.
Yeah.
But we make it happen for the mere fact that it's our passion. This is what we believe in. And when you step out there with faith, with Imani, you have faith, you know, and you say, you know, this is what we want to do. And we know that this can have a cause and effect in a positive way. That's what we do. And it's really the heavy duty motivator in what it is that we do. And doing it, like Damani said, people start reaching out to us. You know, they start reaching out to us. And so that, to me, makes us have that richness.
Yeah.
May not be the dollars, but it's the richness and the soul mm-hmm. and the commitment to what it is that we're doing.
Yeah. Why start Genuine Culture with your mother and not, you know, a friend that you grew up with or a business partner?
Yeah. That's a great question. I think, you know, I learned a lot from my mom and my parents. And they have she has a lot of knowledge about programming herself, you know, programming, how to put on the show, different resources. And I thought it would be cool to make this, you know, generational. Like I said, bring the old school, mix it with the new school, and we got the true school. So just bringing, you know, an elder, an OG that happens to be my mom, you know, with me on this journey, and all the information I can get from an OG, because we got to learn from our elders too, you know. They set the blueprint that we could take it to the next level. So it was important for me to partner with someone, of course, like 100% trust,
yeah.
right? And someone that has 100% faith in what in me and what we're doing. And who better than happens to be my mom with all the knowledge and experience that she brings to the game.
How much do you guys learn from each other?
Oh, I learned a lot from Damani.
Yeah.
Because I think it's important to always keep your head open to learn.
Yeah.
And sometimes people just shut down, you know. For me, the more I can learn and the more I can take in, the more I can navigate through this madness that we're in. So I learned a lot from him. I listened to him. He listens to me. And we mix it together, you know. And when we mix it together, we put it in the oven and we come out with a good product.
Yeah. Do you guys inspire each other?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. I'm always inspired by my mom and my parents and just where they came from and what they were able to accomplish in general. So that's always inspiring. And like we talk about working together, you know, come up with a concept or something. I bounced the idea off my mom. And, you know, she'll flesh it out or give me some things I never thought of, you know. Mm. Like, why don't you think about this or put this in? And it's kind of like this exchange of rapport and ideas that I really think helps the foundation and helps everything really grow in a really nice way.
Yeah. What ideas do you present to Damani?
I present ideas to Damani. In terms of, we were just asked recently about helping out with a celebration. It was for a female. It was last month, you know. And for me, you know, we have these month things that they say, you know, Black History
or Month. Or Women's History Month, yeah.
Month. And I'm like, well, Women's History is every day. Black History is every day. And, you know, 365 days. So I said to Damani, I said, well, Damani, I said, I think it would be good, you know, because consciously you have to, I think about these things and what we are trying to expose as well in terms of Genuine Culture. And I said, it's a female celebration. It's March. I said, let's get a female DJ. And so we have a DJ that we've worked with, and that's who we got. And it was a big hit to have this female, and, you know, what we may think like, oh, yeah, Women's History Month is every day. I say Women's History is every day. But that month, it was very significant to when we did it and we had this female DJ. It was like that people, they loved it. And in particular, the person who reached out for us to help do this celebration.
Yeah. That's cool. What are some of the ideas that you present to your mom?
Just about any type of concept that I might have for a show, or if someone reached out and say we'd like to, you know, be involved. Someone, like, for instance, someone recently reached out, and they're trying to put together this weekend of program around education and real education, you know, critical race theory and just real incorporating real American history that includes our indigenous people, you know, as well. When I, you know, when I say indigenous, you know, of course the natives, but us as black people, we're indigenous to this earth, you know?
Yeah.
We're indigenous people to the world. So we're indigenous people all over the globe. So, you know, and like for instance, they're trying to put together this programming and trying to flesh it out. So I, you know, sometimes I'm not sure, I'm skeptical about it just because, you know, the lack of information and, you know, the lack of budget information, what you can do. So that's something like I'd bring to my mom and say, what do you think about this? You know, give it a concept. Do you think we could work with something like this? Do you think it's worth it?
Yeah.
Is it beneficial to not only us, to the community? It's a real thing. So I like stuff like that, I bounce off to my mom and she, so even if I'm skeptical about it, like a lot of times she'll give me, you know, give us the encouragement, like, no, we can do this. We can handle this, even though we got a lot on our plate. And this is why it'd be important to do this. So those are the kind of things we bounce off just to get that, not only just her take on it and in terms of her expertise, also her encouragement and her cosign, which means a lot, you know.
Yeah. Is there, out of the two of you guys, who might be more fearful to do things, you know? Is there one of you guys that's more, you know, reserved when it comes to ideas, like, you know, and then you have to get reassurance from either one of you guys?
Yeah.
I don't feel that kind of vibe, because I think what we do is that we do sit at the table and we talk about whatever the project is, whatever it is that we're going to do. I think we talk about it. And when you go through the process.
Yeah. Yeah.
You work it out.
Yeah.
I think it's when people don't go through the process is when the fear factor comes in.
No preparation.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But yeah, we go through a process. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of times that's just a thing that might hinder a lot of creatives when they're trying to start something and they, you know, they have a business, or, you know, time goes on and there might be a lot of fears that happen and things that might prevent you from being great. So, you know, it's a question that I think, you know, needs to be asked, because it helps a lot of people with ideas who want to create something. You know, it gives them motivation. You know,
right. Oh, totally agree. But that's why you go through the process.
Yeah.
Because you can't just wake up and say, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this. No. There's a process. You got to go through the process. Wake up with that idea of what you want to do, and then you take the stages, and you go through the process.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even with Genuine Coach, like, there was some fear for me just in terms of looking like, how do you do this?
Yeah.
Will it work here right now, right? Yeah. And there's a whole bunch of things. And I read this book called, what is it, Outwitting the Devil. I think it's by Carnegie or something like that. And that was a major influence for me too, because it talked about fear and how, you know, these outrage machines, ever since we're kids, you know, we're not taught to necessarily explore these things. It's kind of like these things that are, you feel like you can't touch or you can't attain just because you're not learning it in this educational space, you know. But it's a lot of stuff that's bigger than that we can achieve. So it's really just like... one of my favorites, Rick James says, busting out that L7 square, you know, and, you know, breaking out. And that's what it's about, you know. But fear is huge, you know, and that's what keeps us down. And we know by the, you know, whatever you want to call it, the transatlantic slave trade or whatever, you know, the basis of that is fear. And we see it today, you know, if you watch, you know, media, it's messages of fear, right? It's here to scare you into doing something.
Or not doing something.
Or not doing something.
Yeah.
Exactly. And going back to Public Enemy, just this always, you know, Takes a Nation, Millions to Hold Us Back, their second album. And one of the profound songs was Don't Believe the Hype. And as a kid, I remember just like, wow, like, you know, not really understanding it, but understanding. And one of the last lines he says in the songs is, false media, we don't need it, do we? And then I look at what's going on now. and all these avenues of what we call information that's not really information, especially with our people. And it's like, you know, they create this fear factor with us.
Yeah.
And we got to break out of that. So that's a little long-winded, but just, you know.
No, be as
that's
be
the
as,
next level up, you know.
Be as long-winded as you want, man. No.
Thank you.
I think, you know, when Damani, like Damani said, he wrote this plan. This is this is Damani's thing, you know. And I did give him the encouragement. Like, we gotta just do this. Let's do it. You gotta do it, you know. And I remember when we introduced Genuine Culture, we made our announcement. We made it in my apartment. Mm-hmm. And we did these little invitations that somebody did for us, like just as a gift. We didn't have to pay for it. We didn't have any money anyway. And did these, and we sent them out to specific people, you know. We didn't have a whole big crowd, but there were some key heads that we wanted to
you know,
be involved in. And it was amazing. You know, they came over. They didn't really know what they were coming for. We said we were going to be announcing something. It was very important. And they came, and Damani gave the presentation about Genuine Culture.
Yeah.
It's just been growth and development from that point on.
Mm-hmm. I mean, where do you think Genuine Culture will be in the next 2 to 5 years?
Next 5 years?
Or two to five.
Two to 5 years. Okay, so I think we're gonna have like a team, like a Genuine Culture team in terms of having different people on the roster. Like, you know, we have like in terms of our management aspect of it, having different artists and DJs and poets on our roster that we represent.
Yeah.
And also just kind of packaging up, you know, the theme shows we have now to take it out even farther. You know, we doing the Western Mass, but the Northeast region we can start out with, and maybe all the way down to Philly and D.C. So just keep doing what we're doing, but expanding it in terms of our team of specific curators and artists that we work with, and bringing those concepts and themes that we have to other places, spreading it out and just keep growing that way.
Mm-hmm. I hope that, you know, God willing, I'd like to see Genuine Culture have its own space.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's what I would like to see Genuine Culture do, is have
their own venue.
Its own venue.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I believe I've heard you speak about that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's because we, you know, we bring our events to a lot of different places here in Western Mass. We've got the support. We've been pretty successful at that. But, you know, there's limited schedules, you know, limited times which you could do stuff. There's, you know, you have to kind of get in where you fit in. And I think once we have create a venue of our own, then we can, I'm glad you brought that up, Mom, we can really break out. Because there's a lot of things or different concepts and people that I like to bring down. Sometimes, like, the demographics, right, whatever, and sometimes you don't know. But when you have your own space, you could really cater it from top to bottom. And I think that would be another thing of really taking it to the next level.
Yeah,
for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A part of taking it to the next level can be partnerships with different corporate sponsors.
Yes.
How do you make that designation between, you know, growing with the help of a corporate sponsor and getting that financial backing and not selling out? You know, how do you do that?
So I'll take that on. One of the reasons why we're LLC, because we want to be in control over what it is that we have created and developed. And I think that is extremely important. So when we understand what corporations are and when we understand what co-oping is, you want to stay away from that.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do because somebody else can control you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want anybody to control genuine culture other than Damani Saitu Gordon and the people who believe in what genuine culture is doing to support it. Grassroots, that's what I want. The corporation, we've seen the destruction that they've done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To very good creative ideas
in
the co-op.
And you know, and I think in a sense, and that's what the thing is, it's this money. That's what it takes. You know, it takes this financial backing. But like you said, we have to remain in control. So if you want to work with us, we have certain standards and certain ethics that the corporate have to abide by, right?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, you can take what people call losses like that. But, you know, hey, you know, a great inspiration with that was Dave Chappelle. Look at that. Look what I ended up. You know, he took his destiny within his own hands. You know, he's got some. He got the support of the people. So that's a great example of how far you can go.
You believe in yourself.
Is this right?
Yeah.
It's about integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Integrity is everything.
And hold on to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you still believe that you can have integrity while collaborating with a corporate sponsor.
Yes.
It'll be under
your terms.
That's right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's extremely important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, what hip hop do you listen to, Ms. Gordon specifically?
I listen to it all.
Yeah.
I really do. I listen to it all. I listen to everything that Damani listens to. I listen to, and Damani turns me on to, yo, mom, check this out.
Yeah,
this is new, and that's the piece about being open.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm not, you know, up on that hip hop like that, but he turns me on to that. And so I learn from that. And then I know what's going on. And it's just like I can turn him on to other genres of music.
Yeah.
And you make those connections as well.
Yeah. So, you know, what's next for Damani Gordon and Mrs. Teresa Cooper Gordon?
I think kind of just follow up what we just talked about. Just keep on bringing our events to the next level. You know, just bringing more people in and creating more awareness of genuine culture. And just I think for our next level is just working. We work obviously with a lot of local artists, a lot of regional artists. But I think the next level is you know, also stepping up on the national acts too. As well,
yeah.
So some other folks we have our, you know, eye on. We'd love to work with, and I hate to say bigger names, but you know what I mean. Just national acts, more well-known acts, and bring them to the area that may not come to the area.
But like when you were a kid and you saw big acts come to the area, and you know, and this kind of subconsciously inspire you to do this now. So, and you're trying to continue that legacy of what you were exposed to and. Expose the community to, you know, what you had. So
that's right.
You know, there's nothing wrong with aspiring for, you know, bigger acts or, you know, even calling them bigger acts because that's the fact of the matter. Yeah,
that's true.
I mean, in 5 years that genuine culture has been around, when you reflect and look at what we've done, it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
What we have done. And in particular in 2020, because 2020 is when this pandemic came about. Genuine Culture was successful to do two events in 2020. The first one was The Soul of Hip Hop Part 2.
Jay Dilla Tribute.
I was there.
Yeah, he was there. Yep.
And then in March, the week before everything shut down, we did the tribute to Erykah Badu.
Women's History Month.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great place to wrap this up. And, you know, thank you guys again. And thank you, Damani Gordon and Mrs. Teresa Cooper Gordon, for being a part of the Words Matter podcast, allowing me to interview you guys. You know, I'm here again, man. I lived in the area for 5 years. I spend a lot of my adult years in this area, so I'm definitely, you know, whoever that I tapped in with, I'm definitely trying to reconnect with this podcast, with this platform, and, you know, I had you guys in mind. So, you know, thank you for being a part of this.
Thank you. And thank you for the work that you're doing, because you're telling the stories, too.
Thank you.
And you're keeping the history alive and well. And so I appreciate you and thank you so much for thinking about us, Genuine Culture, to be a part of what it is that you've created. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You created something really cool, and much success to you. Thank you for thinking about us and reaching out, and thank you for supporting us as well, because you came to quite a few events, and, you know, that means a lot to us, you know, so thank you. And proud to see you doing what you're doing. So keep up the good work, bro, for real.
Proud of you guys too, man. Thank you. Words Matter Podcast. Please, I'm getting better at this. Like, comment, and subscribe on that YouTube, and follow me, subscribe on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. And yeah, man. Next week, every Monday, Words Matter Pod. Thank you.